to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hey guys, welcome to the Dolcezza Sherber Experience. We are live at the Line Hotel on Full Service Radio. I am your host, Violeta Edelman, and I'm here with my co-host and partner in crime,
Billy Bob Rubik, left guard.
AKA Rob Duncan.
Yeah, Rob.
I like that.
Yeah,
I'm going to start like calling you that in the bedroom.
Old comedy skit. Billy Bob, come over here.
Yeah.
I like it.
Me too. Hey, other than, having alter egos, we make gelato. That's something we do in our spare time here in Washington, D.C. We're gelato makers, but we love to talk to people. And we love to talk to our friends. Today we have a friend of us, Lauren Schroeder-Beal. She's the executive director of D.C. Greens. DC Greens is a nonprofit that uses the power of partnerships to support food education, very important, food access and policy. We met Lauren a decade ago when she started a farmer's market in the Glover Park neighborhood in Washington, D.C. I remember seeing Lauren with a baby strapped to her and walking around with a lot of energy, and I just instantly felt like she was our kind of gal. Mm. So welcome, Lauren. It's so good to have you.
It's so nice to be here, and I've just been looking forward to being in conversation with both of you.
Because it was your brother-in-law, Stu, that that brought the connection, because that was when we were back in Georgetown, so
that's
we only
right.
had one shop.
That's right.
And Stu was the guy that was doing the lease and the renting of the second store of ours, and so that's how we got in conversation with him, and he told us about his brother first, like to get a bag of coffee for his brother, and then you came up in
that's
conversation.
That's right. He was trying to lure us down to D.C. with promises of really fantastic people like you. So. And so, it worked. Here we are.
Full circle, a decade later.
That's right.
Finally.
That's
good
right.
to have you here.
So, Lauren, let's talk a little bit about what you do and access to healthy food, which I know is like a big passion of yours. You've said many times that, you know, this access to healthy food is a basic human right. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So DC Greens is really a food justice organization. And one of the things that really drives us is that here in D.C., there's a 15-year life expectancy difference between folks who are living in Ward 8, which is, you know, east of the Anacostia River, and folks living in Ward 3, like upper northwest. And the top four leading causes of death are diet-related chronic illnesses.
I wonder if that's similar to other cities, like when you say that, like the poor neighborhoods compared to the more well-to-do.
Absolutely.
If there is such a difference, and that's crazy.
Yes.
15 years.
15 years from preventable diseases that are directly related to
diet,
access to healthy food.
So what I think people need to understand, what we always talk about with Rob, is like when we're talking about food, we're talking about structural inequalities. We're not talking about food. We're talking about jobs, giving people jobs. We're talking about access to healthcare. We're talking about so many
education.
Other things.
That's right.
Education.
Overall health.
Yeah, for us as a food justice organization, I think it's really important. A lot of people throw around the term food justice, and I think people don't sort of dig in deeper to what that really means. I'll say, you know, making sure that people have access to food, like giving people food, that's not food justice work.
It's healthy food, right? It's fresh food, right?
But it's also
food that doesn't make them sick so that they die of this preventive chronic diseases.
Yes, it's also, though, acknowledging the structural inequalities that got us here.
Right. Why do they need? Why do they don't have food when we have so much food access in this country?
Why is there income inequality that puts people in these conditions? Why,
What is it about
is a descendant
the infrastructure or the system that allows that to happen and allows that to continue to happen?
That's right.
And that's where you have to make the change.
That's
if there
exactly
is
right.
any change to be made whatsoever.
That's exactly
and
right.
And that takes the motherfuckers that are in the office making the laws and the world leaders that don't give a shit about any of this stuff. And I don't want to boil over
no,
too
no,
fast.
No, but I think what's important is it's naming things for what they are. You know, it's saying we have these structural inequalities that are really the descendants of racist policies from the past that, you know, and it's all a sort of a descendant of, you know, of slavery and the sort of structural racism that came from that. So, you know, you've got communities where there isn't you know, there isn't a place to get healthy food. I mean, you know, healthy food, you know, we feel we need to stop thinking about it as a luxury item.
Right.
You know, this is something that as animals we need, and we're seeing that people are, you know, getting sick and dying. And, you know, I use there's something that I it's one of my sort of soapboxes a little bit, but you know, I think with the Flint crisis, you know, a couple of years ago, it became really clear to me that as a country, we expect our cities to guarantee clean water to all people, and when that doesn't happen, you know, we're indignant, and that wasn't always the case. And it wasn't until the turn of the century when the connection was made between cholera and clean water that cities started to see it as a public health issue and something where they needed to get involved. And I think we're in that cholera moment now for food, where the connections have been really clearly made between, you know, lack of access to, you know, clean food and the diet-related chronic illnesses that are plaguing particularly communities of color.
So but the one thing that I see, that in the agribusiness, right, there is a lot of money to be made making, you know, fast food and then treating the diseases that comes from
lots
fast food. So how do you fight
the
that?
Insurance, you know, you have it goes so deep to keep it that way.
It goes deep, but I think, and you know, this
you
is
know
just
how deep
one
it goes,
example.
In my opinion,
go for
the
it.
Root of it is consumer capitalism in all areas.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to sell a burger on the corner, that's fine. You should, I think, participate with the rules of consumer capitalism, and who has the best idea gets rewarded, who works the hardest gets rewarded for that. But inside of like healthcare or education or the prison industrial complex, and now it seems to be like also politics and probably other areas, those should be separate silos that do not participate in the rules of consumer capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
When the bottom line is all about the profits to the shareholders, what happens is then healthcare, education, and all those other things become about how much money are you making, not about the health of the people, the education of the people. So when the rules of the game are such, of course we're all going to play, and who wins, who has the most wins the game. So if you change the rules, you change the behavior of the people that work within
the
rules.
Well, we can get to a point in which healthcare can no longer afford, you know, treating the collateral damage of the American diet. So
those to the fat cats that are making millions.
Well, okay, so, but, you know, one of the things that I feel is my kind of calling here is to make sure that I'm finding folks inside of every sector who actually do want to move things in a direction that's positive. And then, you know, making sure that we're doing everything to sort of resource those people to shift inside of their own sector how business is done. So, I mean, I'll give you an example. And I think this gets to a couple of the things we've been talking about. So, you know, for the past 7 years, DC Greens has run a produce prescription program where, you know, it's been a small number of patients at federally qualified health centers. Their doctors have been writing prescriptions for fresh fruits and vegetables that they could then take to any of the farmers markets in the city, and they get an allotment of free food every week for their family. It's free to them.
That's funded by the city?
That has been funded by
That's
the city.
Cool.
And and also by sort of private donors. And what we do is that the doctors have, for these many years, been collecting the health metrics. So, you know, we see about half of the patients have a decrease in their body mass index, you know, controlled hemoglobin levels. But what is sort of been the most interesting to me is that we've seen a 60% increase in patient retention because, you know, you're dealing with food insecure patients who are getting something very tangible when they go and see their doctor. And so we sort of took that data point and went and started talking to AmeriHealth Caritas, which is DC's largest Medicaid provider. And, you know, what they saw in that data point was, you know, if we can keep people in the continuum of care by giving them food, we have the opportunity to have ER diversion, which is very costly to the system. We can, you know, improve medication compliance. We can keep people coming back so that their doctors are able to see them and give them the kind of support that they really need. I mean, sometimes I joke, you know, this program is like a literal carrot to go see your doctor. But I think that we're about to launch with AmeriHealth and DC Health, the city agency, a new phase of this where we're partnering with Giant Food. And Giant has the only full-service grocery store in the Ward 8 community. And so in this coming month, actually, we're going to be launching a program where folks who screen positive for food insecurity, and have one of these diet-related chronic illnesses will get a prescription that they then take to the giant pharmacy. The pharmacist is going to give them a coupon to spend in the produce aisle. There's an in-store nutritionist.
So the doctors give you a prescription for
really cool.
fresh produce.
Wow.
The fresh produce. And it's funded by the insurance company because they feel that, you know, this has the potential for real cost savings. And I think, you know, we've got an outside evaluator for this really looking at the claims data to understand what is the patient behavior. And I mean, again, I don't know where it's going to go, but I feel like that's when, you know, yes, people are thinking about their bottom line. I don't fault people for coming to a situation from different angles with different exigencies on themselves based on how they're situated. If we can find ways where people are able to get what they need across every part of that, like, that's where the fix comes.
Exactly. Like the insurance companies to get their successful business model and also the people to get them access. That's, yeah, totally. You have to have that mutually beneficial to all parties for it to be like sustainable or to get everybody on board.
Yeah. I mean, one other thing, if you don't mind. I mean, I think, you know, one piece of food justice is what I said, sort of recognizing these structural issues and then working, you know, with the structure to shift the system so that it's not like you're just giving people, giving people food. You're going to give people food tomorrow. You're going to be giving people food forever. If you're not working simultaneously to make it so that people are able to feed themselves, in my mind, you're not actually working on food justice. The other piece of food justice that I think is really important is recognizing that too frequently the folks who actually have a lived experience of food insecurity are not given pathways to meaningfully impact the policies and programs that are sort of enacted on them.
Right.
And as a result, in my mind, you have policies that don't work again and again because you include
them in the process.
Well, that's the nature of the problem overall. That's why I think that, you know, I mean, we're in the situation at the greater level that we are, where the majority of the country, a large majority of the country, did not want the current situation that we have right now politically.
Or you have people
because you have disenchantment and people who
on both sides. That's on both sides. You don't recognize the other side.
If everybody, participated in the, you know, in the political process at the local level, at the federal level, at the national level, whatever, then a lot of the stuff that we deal with would not be so. We have the power as the people.
That's right.
What are so many people? People don't get out and demand for it.
Well,
that's
the problem. When you have food insecurity issues, I mean, it's hard to also.
I agree.
Be an
no, there's a lot of people that it's easy for me to say that. I understand from the position that I'm at. So,
can you explain to us what food insecurity is and how it affects bad health?
Yes.
How you become sick because of the stress that you're suffering, basically.
Yeah, I mean, food insecurity, I think, is really, you know, it's a term that people have used really to replace the term hunger in a lot of ways because what it gets at is the question of, there's actually a technical question that people get asked, which is, you know, have you at any time in the past 12 months been nervous that you weren't going to be able to feed yourself or your family? And if you answer yes to that question, that is an indicator of so many difficult choices that you are making in your life, you know, choosing between housing and food.
Exactly. That would automatically indicate then also something with healthcare, access to healthcare, that they also probably, if they're insecure with that, with the food, then also to go to a doctor and have
the money
to afford that and insurance, they also, that would automatically probably be directly linked to that as well.
And I mean, I think what it points to is also the level of stress that people are living in. You know, to have to spend your time thinking about how you're going to feed yourself
basic
and your
needs, food and
basic
shelter,
needs.
If those are not met, man,
that's right.
That's
the level
hardcore.
Of sort of
so how many people are under like food insecurity in the country?
Oh, I should know that statistic.
Okay.
I don't.
It's okay, don't worry about
it. Yeah, I mean, I know that it is.
Or in DC, what you know?
I should really. I think that, you know, what's interesting about that question is I think we are just starting to learn the real scale of the issue because doctors have now started putting this food insecurity screener into their clinical care. And I think what I've been hearing from doctors is they're shocked at the degree of people who are actually struggling with this issue. And, you know, the other thing is, even just from a food perspective, I mean, if you're trying to figure out how you're going to feed your family, you are always going to be buying the lowest common denominator food.
100%. And dollar meal.
That's
dollar
right. Value and, meal. And, you know, which means that you have people that are putting in their bodies the food that sort of, you know, heavily processed, not really with, you
that
know,
then leads to other problems.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So, I mean, but I, what I, you know, you brought up this question of like, if you are, you know, food insecure, if you're struggling with poverty, it's hard to participate in the process of, you know, of policymaking. And one of the things that we identified as an organization is, you know, we were in all of these policy conversations and we were like, you know, everybody here is wringing their hands like, oh, we really need to have folks with a lived experience of food insecurity here. And maybe if we have the meetings at night or if we have childcare. And we realized, you know, everyone around this table is paid to be here. We are all paid to be here. And if we genuinely want folks to
pay
be
them.
Here, pay them. And so we hired.
Treat them the same way that we treat each
it.
Other.
Exactly. Yeah. Value. If we claim to value what they're bringing to the table, then let's value it. And so we started a community advocates program where, you know, we basically had a cohort of folks, all with a lived experience of food insecurity, who we started paying to go to meetings and not to speak from our perspective, not as advocates of what we wanted to get passed, but really just so they could speak from their own perspectives. And it's been incredibly powerful. What we've also noticed in this process is a lot of times, you know, people who are in positions of power, if someone doesn't use the right words or if they, you know, say something, you know, school food is a great example. School food is an incredibly complicated thing. And the folks who are, you know, doing school food have all kinds of pressures on them. They're working with, you know, $1.60 in ingredient costs. You know, it's very, very difficult. And so, you know, if you have a community member that says something that indicates that they didn't quite understand the structure, they are written off by people. You know, it's very easy to be like, well, you don't understand what I'm dealing with, and then miss the very important points that they might be bringing. And so what we started to do is, okay, well, let's make sure that this set of community advocates, when they're in those spaces, can say, well, you know, according to the Feed DC Act of 2010, which changes the way that they are listened to. And so that's sort of been a phase one of it. And what we also started to realize is, you know, isn't it like what a mess that we have created these spaces where people have to become just like the person that they're talking to in order to be heard.
Yeah.
And so what we've been trying to do now as an organization is say, well, you know, maybe spaces like the Food Policy Council need to come up with other forms of gaining wisdom from the folks that are living in these conditions, as opposed to expecting people to show up at these wonky conversations where, you know, they have to do all this extra work just to be heard.
So maybe it's maybe flip that too, you know,
flipping it.
You know what, why don't we go to the communities itself where they're all gathered?
That's
and
right.
We educate ourselves of what's how they speak,
and that's what
and
we're working
how
on that's
the issues and how they talk about it, as opposed to bringing them to our wonky
exactly.
meetings and educate, you
exactly
know? Yeah, it would take both.
That's
for
right
sure.
That's right. And that's sort of what we're working on this year, really, together with the Food Policy Council and our community advocates, and having the community advocates decide what those spaces should look like. Because again, you know, the constant sort of placing of one set of ideas onto other folks, you know, you never get to the core.
Yeah.
So I
yeah.
see that in a local level, the grassroots movement is strong, and I see the changes and I see the things that are happening. I also wonder, you know, in the big picture, right? If we want to change the food system, we got to talk about the farm bill, right? Because, I mean, that is the thing that actually determines what happens with our agriculture. And the farm bill, it's roughly every 5 years. You know, the federal government reviews the food and farm landscape and decides, you know, what it does with it. And it's basically always prioritizing encouraging big farm to get bigger. And so how do we break that monopoly, you know, of, and we see it with our, you know, we make gelato, we buy from the farmers here around, and we see how much they struggle and how difficult it is for them to survive. And we all know that, you know, our agricultural business, it's basically, you know, financing cheap oil on a way. So how do we, you know, like, how do we fight this monster industry that has so much money to lobby? And the Obamas tried to do this.
Yeah.
They try over and over and over. And there was all this money pouring in, you know, against every initiative that they tried to do to make sure that they kept the structure in place.
You know, and I
what a big complicated question. Yeah. Right? How to change that.
That's and hard. I don't, you know, I don't purport to know.
Of
but
course.
I do think that.
Think local at global.
Yeah. I honestly think that. The more that we can shed light on the structures that have been built to confuse and obfuscate, the more that we're going to know the path forward.
Which, you know, right now, kind of with technology as it is, and everybody has the cameras and everybody's linked to everybody else and a network, so that seems to be bringing a lot of shit to light that was always there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, now I think everybody, because it's such a new way of communicating, it's so new for us, everybody's freaking out. You know, you can just turn on the news and everybody's just freaking out. They don't know what to do about all this stuff. But that's, I think that's a big positive tool to bring all this stuff to light.
I also think that, you know, so frequently... you know, local farms and living wages and, you know, sort of farmer needs get pitted against the needs of low-income residents of our city and our country, in that, you know, there's this tension like, oh, well, we need to be able to survive on the farm and to pay a living wage, and so we've got to jack up these costs, and then, you know, but this is, you know, this community needs, you know, lower-cost food in order, and there's this way that there's this sort of built-in tension that I think sort of gets exacerbated by the fact that the farm bill also contains SNAP inside of
Absolutely.
It. And so there's this
which
place.
Which is like under big time pressure
yes.
to
well,
be
every time you have Republicans,
right?
That's
I mean,
right.
conservatives are always trying to limit.
That's right. And I mean, I almost wonder if, you know, in some ways the conversations about access to healthy food need to be had in a health in like our health sector as opposed to in our ag sector. But I mean, that's a separate question. But I guess what I've seen and that I think is a nasty and complicated thing that happens is let's take like the sugar lobby and like, you know, the soda industry, for example. You know, every time that somebody tries to come up against big soda or the beverage industry in a city, the soda industry ends up using sort of they set up, they're called like we call them like AstroTurf because it's like a fake grassroots organization that the actual soda lobby, you know, sets up, where they put people of color out saying, well, this is bad for our community, you know. So it's this, They end up, it's this sort of strange bedfellow.
It's a sham. Every
it's
time
sham.
You try to go after them, it's a sham.
But
they market themselves so well that they hide all those
right.
things.
That's right.
You know,
and you know, these are the same things that are actually directly targeting communities of color, killing, I mean, you know, related
exactly.
to the diabetes rates that we see. And I think that, again, if you actually do the work of making sure that these communities and that the leaders inside of these communities who know better, who see what's happening, are given...
So empower the people. It
that's
goes
it.
Back to that.
That's right.
It all
because
goes
then
back
you
to
can't
that.
Lie like that
educate,
anymore.
Educate,
you know?
Empower.
Because then you have actual yeah. genuine leaders standing up, and not just leaders, but, you know, full communities of people standing up and saying, no, you can't use us as a kind of a tool for advancing your actual corporate interests. So,
you know, that, I mean, that's always, yeah,
I
it's
don't
true,
want a
it's
grape
true,
soda,
true.
I want grapes.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, all of this to me has everything to do, it'll be interesting to see what this country does in November. which kind of relates to what you're saying as far as when pushed on and taken advantage of and lied to and manipulated, etc., do we respond to it and come out and say, you know what, fuck that, hell no, we want something different? Whether it's the local community with the tax and this and that, or it's at the national level. I'm really curious to see what goes down in this country in the next in the next month and a half, you know, just to see what is the response. And I have a little bit pessimistic historically, view. People, I just think it's going to be hell or high water. We're in power, and this is just what at all costs alienating all the people and all that. I mean, you know, this whole like confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, it's just like, you know what? I don't care. The attitude of like we have to get our agenda done at all costs, and that's what's going to happen. And I mean, there is I know there's breaking points to any system. It's just I don't think we're there yet.
Well, I actually think we're at a fracture point, you know. And I think what
talking
I
fractals. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that what concerns me so deeply, and again, it's. You know, we were talking before the show started, you know, I have a sort of an obsession with fractals. So, you know, which is, you know, basically seeing the microcosm, sort of the macrocosm exists in the microcosm and vice versa. So, you know, there's sort of shapes that.
Or understanding everything kind of works the same, or everybody has the same needs when you get inside
of
it.
Well, what concerns me is that I think that we are no longer doing the work of knowing each other as humans. And so, you know, back to what I was saying about, you know, recognizing that these insurers, that there are people inside of that system that want to shift things. Or, you know, I think, you know, we really feel right now, and I personally feel, I've been so moved and changed by the work of listening to folks who are living in very different conditions than how I was raised, and sort of recognizing my privilege and recognizing how we are trained not to listen to folks who have a different knowledge base or don't have the same educational privilege or whatever it is. I feel right now that, you know, some of the work of advancing food justice is creating more opportunities for folks who care about the food system but maybe don't have points of contact or don't really, you know, haven't had the experience of really learning from folks who are living in different conditions and creating those channels. And I think that you are sort of changed by that experience.
And
I feel like, again, there's a similar shape to the ways that we are, you know, Democrats and Republicans, or, you know, are not listening to each other and are not not finding those places of human commonality there.
We're back to it's a very tribal way that
That's
we're
right.
behaving right now. So it's like, well,
which
red
is one
or blue
of the main issues we have right now.
One
tribalism
the other.
It's
damaging. It's back. It is back. It's in
vogue. Well, and it's being whipped up. It's being whipped up by our leadership.
I mean, it's okay when
well,
you're
all
small.
Over the globe.
That's
this
right.
is something.
It,
there seems to be a
Brazil
thing right now,
mm-hmm.
like this whole way of doing stuff that's kind of back to tribalism. Is it's there's momentum behind
which
it
which
right
is the
now.
Historical pattern that we are living out. I mean, you know, I don't know if we have the power to fight it entirely, because I think, you know, there are these kind
but
of
but then
rhythms.
Again, you were saying, you were talking about, you know, feeling the suffering of others. You were talking about empathy.
That's right.
And how it transforms you, and that is not fighting.
No,
that's
not
right. Fighting.
That's right.
That's empathizing, and that comes from a different place. And
that's
fighting
right.
is part of the problem, right?
Well, and I think actually it's interesting that you say that, because what is different now than ever before is the rise of female leadership across the world.
Yeah.
Dear God,
and,
I say, you know,
and I mean, and
need,
I that's it.
History is 10,000 years old, roughly, right? From agricultural revolution 10,000 years ago. For the last 10,000 years, who has done it? Male.
Mm-hmm.
Male dominated history, and the cities and the kings and the queens and the walls,
mm-hmm.
and all this. And so finally, it seems to be not only women, but there's a female thing coming into the species, whether it's psychedelic research and the plants and cannabis being legalized.
We're talking about food. Food as medicine.
That's
right.
The female perspective has been kind of
It's not just
repressed.
Women. Yeah,
then the overall way of doing things and communicating and nurturing.
That's right.
And
the sort of
because male,
female
we've gotten
energy
to this
in
point.
The men
yeah,
has
yeah.
been, forcibly squashed.
And for a long time, women have to behave like men.
That's
and
right.
for a long time, we had to behave like men to be accepted.
That's
and
right.
that's
and,
also
and
wrong.
Still so
well,
much.
I mean, this
so,
is
right?
back to what I was saying about the spaces of the Food Policy Council.
And
I mean, it's
and
the same shape.
And this is also the tools of communication that we.
That's right.
That we yield right now are allowing these voices, you know, for better and for worse. I mean, Russia, robots and this and that. You know, there's always the good and the bad with everything, right? But it also is now finally, I mean, again, the Me Too movement, any kind of thing goes too far in a lot of cases too. But that is that shows the power of the women getting together, especially in these instances where it's like, whatever, rape and all that. It's allowed them to voice their voices to be heard and changes to be made. And the women, the female perspective right now is on fire.
But
and
it's very, we still are not at a place where
we're not equal.
Well, I mean,
we're not equal and we're not equal. I mean, we should be
right.
paid equally and all that, but a woman is very different from a man.
And so what I was going to say
and
is we're not yet at the space where we are governing and communicating with the energy of, you know, that I think of a female energy can bring. And so, you know, I still think that there's sort of a level of like energetic cross-dressing that, you know, women have to bring into these spaces.
Yeah.
And I, you know, just like
to
having,
be able
having,
to negotiate and being accepted. Well, yeah.
And I think what the true shift is analogous to what I was saying is like having to completely flip on its head how we are doing this work and letting new shapes be formed of how we communicate with each other and how we respect and empathize with each other. And I do think if we can lean into that, and the conditions are there for us to be able to try new things in this way, then I think we might be able to be safe. And, you know, I'm struck by, you know, I heard a panel once, and there was a woman from Rwanda there. And what she said was that, you know, after all of the genocide, you know, they actually set up a law where 50% of every level of government, from local tribal council to the Congress,
has to be female.
And right now, what she said is the women ended up being, you know, they had not perpetrated the crimes. And so they were able to come and do the healing work that was necessary. And now, I mean, she said, you know, at that time, at least, I think more than 60% of their Congress was female.
Wow.
And I mean, you know, those are the kinds of shifts.
That's a hopeful momentum, a hopeful feel that you can feel happening right now. I'll never forget going to the Women's March and going down there kind of like, you know, innocently, naively with the family and all that, not knowing really kind of what it's going to be like, and just was blown away by the feel of how many ever people were there. That, you know, 500,000, 800,000, just a lot of people all together. And we had gone to all the protests, any gathering that was pretty large down there. And just the resonance and the vibe of that gathering, because mostly it was female and women, was such a different feel. It was something so palpable, so real, so powerful, and yet so gentle and nurturing.
It was kind.
And female.
It was,
you know?
I mean, I
so
you know, I remember.
Uplifting.
That's right.
Yeah.
I remember trying to get through
motherly.
This massive crowd and being like, "Oh, excuse me. Oh no, after
I
you."
Know.
No, again, who knows who? I mean, you think about it. I mean, who knows better how to? I mean, the female, the mom of the family. You know, I mean, there is a place for male. There is. There's a place for male, and there's a place for female. And I think a major problem has been for the last thousands of years, it's been 99% dominated by the male perspective, which is just, it's out of balance.
Right.
You
I mean,
both.
You know, I've got a son and a daughter. You know, and there are, you know, just things that my son does, you know, that are, you know, he's drawn to, you know, war games, and he wants
smash
to,
yeah,
he wants to do, you know, and it is confusing to me. I feel confused by it, and I see it, and, you know, no one gave it to him.
No,
like, this was from the start.
That's what leads us to butt heads with each other as a ram,
that's
so
it.
We can get to the female. You know,
right.
That's in our biology.
That's right. And I think, you know, because of the structures of power that we've set up over the years, you know, that has been what has dominated. And I think we do not know what would happen if we reverse that.
Can you just imagine if it had continued to be a matriarch and a goddess worshiping society, and we had grown in that, and it had been continued to be from the female perspective. I mean, it would be so radically different from how we live right now than from the male perspective.
And I think it's also going to be many generations more. Giving themselves permission to tap into that in themselves, because we've had to move in a different way.
No.
It took me so many years, you know, and I look at my kids and I'm hopeful, because I see that now the process is a little bit shorter, but still far away from where I want it to be. But it took me a lot of years to completely allow myself to honor myself.
That's right.
100%. And guys, just do it, you know. But we have a long way, because we're always asking for permission and forgiveness and this and that. And even you see it, you were talking about Kavanaugh, and you were talking about, you know, all that. And you see it in her testimony, Dr. Ford, you know. And I read an article about, you know, how he was so angry, and she was incredible, but she was
composed,
very much contained and composed. And how we are still, as women, not able to be angry and use that anger and in a way that, you know, plays for us. And so I appreciate everything that she did. I'm not commenting on her. I'm commenting on us females and how
the roles that we play.
Whereas we still have those, you know, men getting angry in the stage and us getting scared.
Yeah. You know, I had an experience with my daughter that just, it kind of gave me a lot of hope for the future, which was we were watching the old Star Wars, like the original Star Wars,
We were watching it like two days ago.
Yeah. So, and it was, I think it was, you know, this was many years ago, and it was sort of the first movie that they'd seen, you know? And so we were watching it, and we were all really into it. And at the end, you know, everybody's getting in their, you know, battle, you know, the rebellion are getting in their thing. They're going to like get the, you know, the Death Star or whatever. And she goes, you know, where are the girl pilots? Huh. And I was like, never occurred to me. Would never occur to me. And I said, "Gosh, this girl—that's
how different things are."
Yes, she has never seen a piece of media that wasn't created with a very conscious effort to make sure that there were female protagonists as a piece of it. To the point where she now can see something that I was trained not to see.
Exactly.
Yeah. 100%. Then that was just the way that it was.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I thought, you know, things are changing
radically,
and it's just as much because, you know, we are making sure that voices are represented in the creation of those pieces of media. You know, we're making sure that women are a part of that. We are making sure that people of color, you know, more and more are given, you know, positions where they can be the creators of our media and of our landscape. And that's, you know, that's how things shift.
Yeah,
building those pathways.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, we never took a break.
Tell everybody who they're listening to, because we're not going to shut up. Unless we get
I think it's time. We're going to take a short break. We're talking to Lauren. She is the founder of DC Greens here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to the Chesa Sherber Experience, and we're going to be right back.
Thank you.
"Hey guys, welcome back to the Dolcezza Sherbert Experience on Full Service Radio. We are live from the Line Hotel.
We got 10 minutes to save the world. We got to cut it soon, so so much to talk about.
I know we are.
Let's change subjects. Let's go far out with something, you know,
go like route,
fractals.
Go for it.
I know that Lauren wants to talk about fractals and her perspective fractals. And her latest
go
obsession
for it. You
with
have 10 minutes.
Fractals, Lauren. Oh, what does fractals mean to you? Why? What is your latest
I'll
obsession
you.
With fractals?
Yes, and it's why? It's How? Really it goes back a while for me. I mean, I think you know. I realized maybe 15 years ago that I think I have like a form of synesthesia, which, you know, is sort of like overlay. It's like an overlay of some senses onto other things. And I really experience most relational things as like shapes. I have a lot of shapes. Like I categorize things in terms of shapes. It's sort of hard to explain, but shapes are very important to me and sort of... making sure that things are aligned is very, very easy for me in some ways because I can see shapes that are similar structures. So I know that that's a little hard to
but
understand.
That's like, you know, like just a little comment and keep going, but it's like synesthesia. That's like a common reported occurrence whenever you drink ayahuasca, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. There's like certain people who have that. Very few people that have that normally, but then when you go into the ayahuasca experience, you see the music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody there, all the people that go into the experience, the way that they comment on the song sung by the shaman is not what it sounded like, but what it looked like, what the song looked like, and how the high note was maybe a sharp, you know, like a magenta kind of color. And then when they drop it down to a low note, it kind of changes into like an olive green kind of thing, and the patterns that they see from the shaman that's singing. So it's really interesting, but continue on in your shapes and synesthesia.
Well, you know, at some point I ended up, you know, being exposed to fractal geometry, you know, maybe about 15 years ago. And you know, fractals, as I mentioned, are, you know, it's sort of repeating shapes for infinity in every direction. So, you know, you sort of, there's a shape and then you zoom into it and every part of that shape contains the shape. And then you zoom into those parts and in every direction, the shape is a recurring thing inside of it. So, and it goes on, it literally, like technically goes on for infinity. I mean, this is a mathematical equation. And so for me, I started feeling like, you know, a lot of times people when they're talking about fractals will stop with the physical universe. You know, they'll stop with what they can measure. And that's not what infinity means. You know, infinity isn't about sort of just where you can touch. So for me, I started thinking about, well, what are the shapes that are, you know, if you go beyond the physical universe, you're also talking about memories and dreams and history and, you know, it's everything. It's every direction. And
more possibly the fractal mathematics apply in
all
that
of these spaces.
Well.
That's right. And that, you know, what I started to realize is, you know, you talk about these repetitive shapes that you see in fractals. You know, anybody who's ever like kept a journal over their lives, when you look back at your old journals, like you are still dealing with the same thing. It might be slightly different. You know, it's got a different moment, but it's the same shape.
So what changed, you know, like that experience, like looking back on journals from 20 years ago and stuff like that. So true. Same things,
and
demons and stuff like that. The what does change is who's experiencing it.
Well, you
mean the perspective that one is like, 20 years ago, maybe I would get depressed for certain things and all that, that those things maybe still enter the arena of consciousness, but now because of whatever, because I've grown up or I've evolved a little bit, I've worked on stuff, now those demons that come into that area, I can now watch them as opposed to being collapsed down by them and becoming depressed for a week and not being able to get out of the funk. And so,
well, and it might not, it might not be the content that's the same, but... Again, and this is where the synesthesia comes in, like the shape of how you deal with it probably doesn't change.
Huh.
And that, you know, so I really started feeling like each of us, you know, because your stuff, your shapes, they are yours.
Exactly.
They are not mine.
Each individual.
Everybody has their own. Yep. And that in some ways that is an equation. that is your fractal equation on this planet.
Well, that would be far out. No, once we get to the understanding of mathematics and self, that we have each one has its own equation, you know. But I mean, yeah. I think that what you talk about as far as fractals, like I've, you know, put very generally kind of read and studied fractals and stuff for a long time as well, and just kind of the fractal being like the language or the mathematics of nature.
That's
how
right.
does a fern grow? How do clouds form? Coastlines
That's
are
right.
very fractal.
That's
you can
it.
Zoom, you can look at a yep. coastline of California and you zoom in to a
That's
little
right.
piece of it, and that has the same pattern as the whole coastline
That's right.
of California.
That's right.
And then they talk about also that applying to the stock market behavior,
mm-hmm.
population explosion and density. They're
That's
looking
right.
into using that way of trying to understand the process of the formality of occurring or happening.
That's right.
Which
and
then
all
goes
of
into
those
the individual
things,
life
right.
as well. It's the same
that's right.
processes like, yeah, there's so many similarities and resonance
right.
with the process of formation, whether mm-hmm. it's an individual, a community, a society, a cloud, a coastline.
That's right.
There seems, or a galaxy
that's
or an
right.
electron. There
that's
seems
right.
to be those similarities across all of them.
That's right. And I think on every scale, you
yeah.
know, and I think that, you know, the geometry of nature, I mean, again, nature is not just what we can measure, right?
Right.
We are nature. I mean, in some ways, it really is sort of my conception of you know, what some people would call God.
Yeah.
I mean, it is sort of this it's creation.
Yeah.
And
it's the whole
I mean,
thing.
As you said, the process of formation. I mean, creation. It's creation.
Yeah.
And there
is no end.
And so what I feel, and you know, my staff tease me about it, but I've really brought fractals very like centrally into our work at DC Greens. You know, I really make everything goes well now.
We can
you're
close
awesome.
The show
right.
with these like, nuggets.
That's it.
Give us the nuggets.
How are you going to pitch that to investors,
no.
Lauren? That's what I want to hear.
Well, no. But what I feel like is with food. You know, everyone comes to this work from a different place. It's, you know, they're passionate about environmental issues. They're passionate about social justice. It's about nutrition. It's, you know, I mean, you can come from so many directions. And my staff, you know, is a reflection of that. And if we cannot find a way of knowing each other, of understanding each other's perspectives, of hearing each other, of finding solutions that embed sort of everyone's selves into that space, then there's no hope.
Right, because
and
it's
so,
not the real solution.
Well, yeah, and also, you know, if we as a group cannot come up with a way to find a way between the interests of low-income community members and farmers, you know, then how can it ever be solved? And
it's
so,
such a
yeah, we
big
we,
question.
But you know, but I think that the effort of that work together and recognizing that what we are is a microcosm of the macrocosm that we are trying to influence, and then also saying, and what do I need to do as a self? You know, what kind of racial equity, you know, training do I need, or you know. Or learning how to understand how somebody who, you know, comes from conditions of privilege doesn't make them evil, or you know, or understanding that an insurer can actually like be an ally. You know, I mean these types of things, like that to me is how I have found right now to do the work of healing the planet with what I've been given.
That's awesome. Healing Through Fractals. That's the name. That's a good name of the
for
episode.
For our show today.
Healing Through Fractals.
Love
with
it.
Lauren Beal.
Oh my God.
Lauren, thank you so much.
Man,
Lauren.
Yeah, Lauren. It's like, man, we had so much more
to
go into.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming. You're
we'll just
awesome.
Have to hang
we
out more.
We love you. Yeah, it's always.
We have to, yeah.
Yeah.
And thank you guys for listening and be kind to one another, okay? And tune in next in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.